Alright, you guys, this is Scott Merrick with Snacks for the Brain. This is episode 53, and I just returned to my car from interviewing Brenna Simons, who's the graduate student in charge of the AIDSO group at Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the AIDS Outreach Group. And these volunteers dedicate themselves to helping school-aged children understand their options and alternatives and implications of their actions with regards to the possibility of being infected with HIV virus. In this day and age, it may be hard to imagine that there's a lot of misinformation out in the world about AIDS, but wow. Listen up to what Brenna has to say about AIDSO, and check in with us a little bit later for a tech tip tidbit. Before we get started, I'd like to introduce a song by Jeff Wahl, W-A-H-L, and Jeff's an acoustic guitarist who does some marvelous, marvelous work. This is from Magnatune.com. Go over to Magnatune.com and search Jeff Wahl, and there you'll have it. This is from his CD entitled Guinevere, and here's the first song I'm going to play for you.
Reach radio.
Come on, you can do it.
You're listening to Snacks for the Brain.
Listen to what you want to listen to. You want to listen to it.
So this will be episode number 53 of Snacks for the Brain.
Yeah.
And that's long legs for a podcast, so hopefully we'll have many more. I'm here with Brenna Simons,
mm-hmm.
who's a grad student at the Vanderbilt University Medical Center,
yeah.
correct? And you're in charge of the AIDSO, which is
yeah.
the... Is that an... acronym as such, or?
Well, it's the acronym for AIDS.
Right.
It's AIDS Outreach.
Mm-hmm.
We call it AIDS Outreach. It's an educational program through Vanderbilt that involves graduate students, medical students, pretty much anyone that'd like to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, our main goal for our program is, our main focus is just general education, trying to get out to students, high school, middle school students, and pretty much just put some general education out there so that students have the knowledge to make decisions, hopefully better decisions, is our hopeful outcome.
Right.
But that's pretty much our primary goal.
So I know that you're doing a video conference for the Center for Science Outreach.
Right.
A couple of them. And that's one way you do it. But how do you do it otherwise?
Well, we originally started off local. And we still can go local. We go to just local high schools
mm-hmm.
and middle schools. We schedule with generally health teachers or gym teachers
mm-hmm.
are the general people that contact us. And then our original curriculum actually is 4 weeks. We go in one day a week for 4 weeks and start off kind of, we always start off with our transmission game, as we call it, and try and impress on the kids how easy it is to spread and how easy it is not to know. And then we kind of do our general and try and impress that on the children, and then go from there. We do true and false quiz,
mm-hmm.
Try and clarify some rumors and some myths about HIV and AIDS, and And then from there, we'd like to just keep it in an open conversation. A lot of times, you know, students and teachers may not feel comfortable talking about it, and that's where we come in. Oftentimes we've had the teacher tell us, I don't feel as comfortable covering this material. And so that's where we step in and kind of just keep an open conversation with students. We have an anonymous question bag, so they can ask mm-hmm. anything they want, and answer it the following week. And just go from there, I guess. So
I think you're right. It's probably the topic where a lot of people feel uncomfortable because maybe they don't have the language to talk about it in a non-threatening or way, huh?
And with all the stereotypes and the behavior it's associated with. A lot of, you know, HIV doesn't care who you are, it doesn't discriminate, but there are a lot of risky behaviors associated with the disease transmission, and I think it may even be the behaviors as well that the teachers may not be comfortable
students. They're going to open up the bag of sexual behaviors in the
And unfortunately, I think it's important to talk about because mm-hmm. students are involved in risky behaviors, no matter if you think they're too young or not.
But whichever dream world teachers may be inhabiting.
And unfortunately, I think denial can play a big part. That you don't want. I sometimes don't want to think about students as young as 13 engaging in risky sexual behavior or drugs, drugs as well. And
pager
we don't want to think about it. But you know, the less you talk about it, the more students don't have the information. And then they also don't feel comfortable when they want to know the information, and then I think that's what really helps HIV stay as prominent as it is in terms of transmission
and shrouded in a sort of environment of secrecy.
Right,
sort of
exactly.
Something people don't want to talk about. So mainly it's the people who are responsible for the health curriculum.
Usually, yes.
And do they approach you, or do you go out and publicize your efforts?
Well, when we took over the program a couple of years ago, the past leaders, Melody Davis, who's now moved on from Vanderbilt, and mm-hmm. Kira Richter, she's now a postdoc. She's still continuing to help, but she kind of stepped down from the overall leadership. And they had established a lot of relationships with schools in the area, and the teachers that they knew, and so. Those were continual contacts that we would actually, a lot of times we contact them to see if we can set it back up. But we have had teachers contact us as well. It goes both ways. We have a website mm-hmm. through the medical center.
I've seen your single page little site.
Yeah,
is
just
that what
about
you
kind of some contact information. It's not too fancy, but
sometimes that's enough. I mean, you're just looking for contact.
Pretty simple, people to call, and most of the times they want to really get some details and know what we're doing. And So
are there certain media that you use to work with the kids? Do you use videos?
We use a lot of visual stuff, mm-hmm. visual ideas. Like I said, our transmission game, we use...
I wanted to ask about that.
So what it is, it's a chemical. We use it with a chemical reaction, and we use sodium hydroxide mm-hmm. and water. So of a class of 30, we have 28 glasses of just water and 2 glasses of sodium hydroxide. Of course, we have to tell the kids not to taste or And so we have that. And then we have them exchange fluids. So, you know, 2 people take their cups, and one person dumps their cup in the other, and then they dump it back. And kind of like you're mixing a drink, and then you're mixing fluids.
Right.
And so that sodium hydroxide gets mixed with several of the students. And we tell them, usually about 2 or 3 partners, pick 2 or 3 people to switch with.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're done, sit back down. And then we go around with phenylalanine or phenylsaline. And
that's
it's, when dropped into the sodium hydroxide, it makes a pink color.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go around, and if you're pink, and you know, the students get a kick out of it, because some of them are pink, some of them are not, but you know, we have them all set their cups out, and you'll have 10 or 10, 15, depending on how it was mixed, when you started with 2. And
mm-hmm.
so we're like, you know, you couldn't tell from, you know, sodium hydroxide's clear, water's clear, you couldn't tell from mixing, and how quickly it is just by having 3 partners each in a certain, you know, number of people, how it can be transmitted to quite a few.
That's really stellar.
Yeah, and I think that's our first impression
the point home.
When we walk in, that because we really want to teach really, really emphasize that you can't tell and that you have to be proactive about protecting yourself.
Right.
You can't depend on anybody else to protect you from HIV. And so that's like our first, that's our first kind of initial activity that we really want to impress on them, that, you know, no one else is going to protect you but you, and well, that, you have to do that. So.
That probably jump starts the conversations, doesn't it?
And students always like interactive activities as well, so.
It gets them up and moving around. And,
yeah, it moves them around at first. And then other visuals, we, and part of our curriculum, if we have an extended time with the students, we kind of go over more of the biology.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of understand what HIV is, which
right.
is suppression, major suppression of the immune system. And so we have a game where you have somebody that stands in the middle of a circle, and the people around them are considered their T cells, which are cells of the immune system that HIV targets, and
mm-hmm.
that's why. And so we try and give them visuals. So we have little ping pong balls that represent diseases, common cold or pneumonia or things that we encounter every day that our immune system helps us stay healthy. And then HIV is a large Nerf ball. And if you hit one of the people in the circle, they're out.
Mm.
And so eventually, one by one, as HIV, the HIV ball mixed in with the other pathogens, you know, hits the T cells, the other kids that are surrounding the one person, they start spearing, and then that one person stands there unprotected.
Right.
And so all the little ping balls, ping pong balls can hit them. And so that's trying to give the impression of what HIV is. So
very nice.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I can't take credit. It's been in our curriculum for a long time, but
right.
it's pretty effective. So.
Well, when did the AZO start?
Oh gosh, I'd say 10 years ago.
Yeah.
10, maybe a little longer.
It's amazing that it's been around that long.
Right, and it's yeah. been changing. It's funny how it's had to change. It started off very locally, and recently the reason we started working with the outreach office. I mean, not that we wouldn't have regardless, but we've been actually having a pretty difficult time trying to schedule schools lately,
mm-hmm.
especially after the No Child Left Behind. A lot of teachers...
That's made it difficult for a lot of teachers.
A lot of teachers mm-hmm. felt that they were worried about sacrificing those couple days in class because of what they had to get done.
That they would be spending teaching to the test.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, it caused some problems. And then, of course, with any volunteer organization, sometimes we'd have schools and no volunteers,
mm-hmm.
or all the volunteers and no schools.
Right.
And so we decided that we may need to change it, maybe downsize a little bit until
mm-hmm.
we can start reconnecting with the local schools. And any local school that has teleconferencing, of course, we could do what we're doing with the
outreach. When you say you're doing mainly outside of local schools, where are you going?
I don't know. As we've, you know.
You're sort of getting started for the spring, right?
Anybody that wants to listen to us
okay.
right now, we don't have any targets necessarily.
Well, if you're listening to this, be aware that even though we do have a couple of programs scheduled with AIDSO and with Brenna coming up, and I'll list those dates and times in the show notes. Don't have them in my brain right now, but it's coming up pretty quickly. And we can schedule other interactions using the video conferencing technology. So if our scheduled dates don't gel with what you're looking at and your schedule, we don't much care where you are.
Right.
We'll be glad to get in touch with you and help facilitate that through the Center for Science Outreach.
Definitely.
Yeah.
We're looking, trying to maybe branch out a little bit, and we're still trying to establish our contacts with local schools again. But
something I wanted to ask too is, do you have contact with other AIDS outreach organizations, and do you share models of practice
no,
or anything?
Not at this point,
yeah.
Which is a great idea,
because yeah.
I know there are.
Got to be out there.
Several of our volunteers that are medical students have worked with programs in the past.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely on our list of things to do. But right now we're just trying to downsize a little bit so that
right.
we can kind of build back up
uh-huh.
our outreach programs. We also, in the past, have done what we call rubberware parties for the
mm-hmm.
for the colleges, mostly Vanderbilt, but
mm-hmm.
we also do more of a college-age curriculum for students as well. And so,
good.
Yeah, and that's definitely obviously a little more open,
mm-hmm.
And that's also not as much focused on just basic decision making, but also alternatives to sexual intercourse or
right.
risky behavior in general.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's actually really a lot of fun.
That's great.
Yeah, so we have all these great opportunities. It's just a matter of rescheduling or reconnecting with the
I commiserate in handling the video conference.
Yeah.
Trying to juggle everybody's schedules and needs is
and the contacts that we've had are now gone, and, and we used to have Kira and Melody had some contacts with Vanderbilt through people that were RAs through the Greek system as
right.
well, and so I'm trying to reestablish those as well. So
we're still taping. That's good. Well, let's talk about Britta for a minute. You're at the medical center as a graduate student.
Yes.
What's your field of focus?
I am an HIV researcher.
Mm-hmm.
I'm be an HIV immunologist.
Mm-hmm.
I study certain patients or subjects that have been infected with HIV a very long time and have never had to be on medication. They live fairly normal, healthy lives.
Are you taking mainly a genetic tack there, or?
There are genetic links, but I'm looking more at just qualities of their immune response that help them maintain the virus.
Diet, nutrition, exercise,
that sort of thing? More just their immune systems. I look at their T cells.
Oh, you get a little more deep.
More molecular.
A little more deep.
Yeah. I'm looking at specifically at their CD8 T cells, which are T cells that are specifically for viral infections, help fight viral infections, and kind of look at just characteristics, like why their T-cells may be different, their CD8 T-cells may be different than people that aren't doing so well, and kind of trying to show that those functions that I pick out of those cells are really functional in suppressing replication. That's basically the general idea of my project, so.
What do you see as the most promising route for the future of treating this disease, or
other than from the prevention, which is number one as far as I'm concerned.
The P word.
Yes. Well, I think that when you get into vaccine design and relying on the immune system, it gets very complicated. The most simple idea is to block it.
Right.
So things like they have these new CCR5 inhibitors. CCR5 is a receptor on the virus, or no, a receptor on the cell, I'm sorry, that allows the virus to recognize the cell it wants to infect and to get in. And they're working on inhibitors of that just initial action of the virus binding to that particular cell and getting into the cell. If you can just stop the entry, the virus can't survive swimming out in an open. It needs to be in the cell to replicate. So I think that some of the blockers, those kind of blockers,
page
I guess we call
80,
them, inhibitors,
80,
that they've been working on, I think are really
80.
The most promising at this point.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people working on it.
Yes, yeah. and they're even up working with they're up to working with monkeys now, which is very promising.
Mm-hmm.
So using topical CCR5
right.
inhibitors.
Wow.
Yeah, and testing that, mostly for vaginal, the topical vaginal area, that and using those and kind of testing transmission, I think that could be the most, I guess it's all part of prevention.
Yeah.
It's still prevention, but
prevention,
it's more.
Prevention sidebar.
Yeah, so.
Interesting.
I think that's really, and then, I think the two main aspects are preventing, like such as the blockers, and treating those that are infected to keep their viral loads low. Because as far as we know, there are still people living with HIV that aren't, they're still doing fine. We're growing with them because they were infected in the early 80s and they're still fine, and we continue to follow them. We have no other cases to know except, so now the longest person living with HIV used to be 15 years, now it's 20, now it's 25, and it's just amazing, you know. And I think that the key for those that already have HIV would be just how to lower the viral load and keep it there.
Awesome.
So.
Interesting stuff.
And also would decrease infectivity to somebody else, so their infectivity is much less, if their viral load's less, and so that prevents transmission as well, so.
Let me jump into another quick question. We're about done here. I wanted to ask, you know, one of the things that we do when we meet with all these kids all over the country and is to give them examples of, I mean, why why did you become interested in science in the first place? Why?
Science.
Why are you doing science? Why are you in the, at the medical center?
You know, as long as I can remember, I've loved it. You know, even since a kid, and I think that really it's kind of the exploration of something, why something works, and getting to find out why all on your own, and coming up with your own idea of how something works, and then being able to test and prove it. I just think that's really cool. So I think that's the main reason why I'm in science.
Yeah. So. Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Well, hopefully graduated. I have been in school about 4 years now, so graduated, and I think I'd like to be more on the communication side. So understanding the science and being able to relay that to people that aren't in science, people that make decisions for our country, people that make healthcare decisions, which in whichever way, and maybe to kind of be an interpreter for science, I think.
So are you, is part of your work having to do with the science and communication department?
Well, AIDS Outreach gives me a lot of that experience, just kind of relaying.
Right.
And then, in some ways, because, so the subjects that I study, I've actually met a lot of them, and many of them are interested in what I'm actually doing with their blood samples and such. So that's been kind of neat to do the work and then translate it back to someone that's not in science and relate to them why they're so important and what I'm finding. And so I have had some opportunities in that as well. And that's a really, that's just a rewarding experience to kind of give back to the people that are giving you time and blood and, making the effort and really interested in helping. So it's been really great too.
Well, thank you. We've been here with Brenna Simons, who is the head of the AIDSO, the AIDS Outreach Organization at Vanderbilt at the Medical Center.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank you for your time today.
Thank
what
you.
Kind of music do you like?
That's a hard question. I can't think of anything I don't like.
I found some nice acoustic guitar that I may lace this show with.
Okay.
I usually have about 3 songs a show, so
okay.
Yeah, let's go right into one of Jeff Wall's tunes. Are you ready? Today's Tech Tip Tidbit comes by way of Dr. T at the Computer Tip of the Week at completelyfreesoftware.com by way of worldstar.com's Computer Tips. And it's used by permission. Here we are. Erase your hard drive. Sort of a scary topic. People give their old PCs away to family members, charities, and some end up at the local PC repair shop without ever being properly wiped clean. Everything stored on your PC is on the hard drive. There was a two-year experiment done by MIT graduates Simpson, Garfinkel, and Abi Shelat, where they collected 156 hard drives from various places, the web, eBay, PC shops, and businesses. Out of all those drives tested, 129 drives worked, and hardly any of them were properly wiped clean. There were thousands of credit card numbers, private adult stuff, love letters, you name it, that were completely recoverable on those drives. Most people believe that deleting data and then cleaning out the recycle bin does a sufficient job. This is not the case. When you delete something in Windows, it just marks it to be overwritten. There's also a misconception that formatting a hard drive permanently erases stored data. This is also not true. A format just reconstructs the allocation table and checks the blocks on the disk. It does nothing actively to remove the data. It simply leaves it unprotected. With both of these scenarios, if you have the right software, you can recover data thought to be unrecoverable.
So, how do we erase this data on a hard drive for good?
You can physically destroy the drive, but that's not as easy as you think, and you'd be amazed at what people can recover data from. There are cases where people have drilled holes in the platters, and it could still be recovered. You can take it to a PC repair store that has a degausser, that's D-E-G-A-U-S-S-E-R, that removes all the magnetism from the drive, leaving it useless for good, but this can be way too expensive to justify the price for the common end user. You can write zeros to the drive with the utilities at the hard drive manufacturer site, and that will stop most people, but experienced users can still recover data. If you don't want to destroy the drive and are concerned about keeping your privacy, there are two free programs that can take your hard drive to a state of non-recoverability. First is Derek's Boot and Nuke at dban, that's D-B-A-N, .sourceforge.net, which is an application that you can install on a bootable floppy or CD-ROM. Boot and Nuke uses several methods to wipe the data on your drive to an unrecoverable state. The second title is Eraser 5.7. And that's at www.heidi, that's H-E-I-D-I, .ie/eraser. Though this software is free as well, a $15 donation is encouraged. This software does a great job of sanitizing your hard drive by removing all magnetic and solid-state memory. It does this by using several different techniques, including
pseudo random data overwrite
and techniques defined by the Department of Defense. That's it today for Tech Tip Tidbit. If you have any questions, I'll post all these URLs at the show notes site for you at snacksforthebrain.blogspot.com. Cheerio!
Snacks for the brain and good for me. Snacks for the brain, help me see pieces of the puzzle that I didn't see before.
Keep them in my iPod, there's always room for more.
Snacks for the brain.
Snacks for the Brain is brought to you by the fine folks at the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach, connecting working research scientists with K-12 students worldwide. Check out the website at www.vanderbilt.edu/CSO.
See ya!
See ya!